Thank you, and thank you for inviting. Always a pleasure to be here. So this talk is going to be, so first of all, it's based on these three papers from last year, and it's going to be about two algebraic structures in subconformal field theories. Namely, one of them is the vertex algebra in 4D n equals 2 theories, which I would assume everybody heard about, probably, because at least a lot of people here worked on this topic. So this is the Beam, Lemus, Lee, and the Pillars, Rastelli, Van Rees paper. 4D n equals 2 SCFT and the VOA sector. And another algebraic structure is about in 3D n equals 4, which was found, I should probably mention two papers here. One is Chester, Puffo, Jacobi, another is Beam, Pillars, Rastelli, this one from 2014, and this one from 16, that there is a one-dimensional protected sector, which is a 1D topological quantum mechanics, in other words, associative algebra with a trace, plus, which I'll talk about later, in 3D, that's part of 3D n equals 4. SCFT. And the question that I'm going to ask and answer to some extent is there a relation between these two things? So, and the answer will be yes. Via the third structure, which is due to Yongchang Zhu, from 96, namely that to every vertex algebra V, you can associate an associative algebra. Nowadays, it's often denoted Zhu of V. No, originally, it was called A of V. Which, as I'll explain, in a certain sense, describes dimensional reduction of a vertex algebra. And I should probably draw a cartoon here. So we have 4D n equals 2 theories, and then so we have, on one side we have Coulomb branch, and suppose we have 3D n equals 4, which is related by Kaluza-Klein reduction, which also has Coulomb, have Higgs branch here, Higgs branch here. And, well, the relation between these two objects was studied, of course, a long time ago by Seiberg and Witten, and we know that this connection goes via the math of Hitchin systems. So by Hitchin space. Whereas here, okay, this wasn't really addressed because for an obvious reason, because the connection is trivial, they're simply equal in 4 and 3 dimensions, but nowadays we know that there's a slightly bigger sector here, which is due to this work, we know that the interesting structure here is really the Schur sector, And now the connection becomes more interesting. Well, I should say now it quantizes Higgs branch. This, I'm going to talk about this error. Now, part one is going to be, we'll introduce the necessary physics constructions, and namely SCFT on S3 times S1.
Well, of course, n equals 2.
So suppose that we start with CFT or SCFT on R4. So there's our favorite way to put it on the cylinder, right, by doing a Weyl transformation of the metric. So here on R4, standard that metric, which you can also write as I introduce coordinate y, which is related to r in the following way, and l will be the radius of my sphere. And now by a Weyl transformation, you get a metric here. Now, of course, this Weyl rescaling is reflected in how local observables transform, and the quasi-primary operators in flat space and on the cylinder are related in a known way, where here E is the conformal dimension. And if they also have some spin, that you might need to include Lorentz rotation to account for it, if you also rotate the frame. Now, in this case, operators, as you see, they acquire these factors of exponentials. So and the same happens with the Suse transformation parameters, and namely supersymmetry here, and I'm in the n equals 2 case, is parameterized by conformal Killing spinners. Which in flat space are just these things. And after such transformation, they also acquire explicit factors of exponentials, and namely 8 of them, those parameterized by epsilon and epsilon bar. They become proportional to e to the minus y over 2l, and 8 of them, those corresponding to conformal transformations, proportional to e to the y over 2l. And you can also explicitly construct this background in the Lagrangian case. So I should say, in Lagrangian case, for the background C, my paper with Martin Fluder. And at the same time, there was also, well, a couple of weeks before us, we've had this scooping battle with Palm and Peelers, who also constructed the corresponding background in Lagrangian case. Now, what happens if you choose to close this R? Now, we want to construct theories on S3 times S1, so you have to close this R to a circle. So let's close R. That is impose periodic boundary conditions. Of course, because of this fact, this breaks Susie completely. But there's a known solution to this problem, which is go to a twisted sector. So namely, for each variable f, so f in your theory, you impose that as you go around the circle. So y is a coordinate of this in this direction. So maybe I should add it here. You also do an R symmetry transformation. And here R is the generator of U1R inside SU2R, R symmetry of the n equals 2 theory. And what this actually preserves 8 supercharges. And I should say that this is like, okay, let me first say this, that this preserves 8 supercharges. Namely those that commute with H minus R, where H is the dilatation. So this is a generator of dilatations. And the subalgebra this preserves inside of the superconformal algebra is just, it's just two copies of SU2/1. And centrally extended, so this tilde denotes central extension by H minus R, where here the two SU2s are just the geometric isometries of the sphere, and the two U1s are the R symmetries. So this, so far what I've told you is it's nothing new. This is a standard background that computes Schur index for you. So remark. This is the supersymmetric background that computes the Schur index. Now, it is, of course, possible to consider more general background, to go to a more general twisted sector where, in addition to this R symmetry rotation, you would also have another R symmetry rotation and geometric rotation of the sphere, and that would give you a background that computes the full superconformal index. But here, we're only interested in such background because, and this is the next remark, that this background is compatible with a chiral algebra construction. So this is compatible with the Beam et al. Story. In other words, the two supercharges, Q1 and Q2, whose cohomology contains the vertex operator algebra, they actually belong to this S. And another remark that I should make is that, in fact, there is a slight generalization of the Schur index that still preserves this supersymmetries. Namely, you can consider the following operator, minus 1 to the power 2 r plus r. So little r is another r symmetry generator. So you can recall that in the vertex algebra construction, I should remind you, the conformal dimension of the 2D vertex operator is related to quantum numbers of the 4D operators in the following way, which, using the relations in the algebra, can also be written as r plus twice j2, which shows that, since this is integral, so it shows that h is integral whenever r plus r is integral, and half integral whenever r plus r is half integral. So and in particular, for supercharges, you can check that this thing is always 1. So this actually preserves Q1 and Q2 as well. So we will be able to turn on such holonomy in the background and get a slight refinement, which will be important in a moment, in a few minutes. Okay. So now let me pass to the chiral algebra. I should remind you that in the original story, one chooses a complex plane in the four-dimensional space, and then there is an orthogonal plane, say coordinates z prime, and the vertex operators, they live at points of this plane, and they are constructed as so certain Schur operators where A1, AN are indices of SU2 are symmetry. They're inserted at points of this plane. And at the origin of the complementary plane and contracted with UAN, where UA is such thing. And in my case, for normalization purposes, I also put L here, which was the radius of the sphere. Well, just the length parameter. Now, as you wild transform, as I explained before, what you get is now we have sphere times a line with coordinate y here. And it turns out that the z plane maps, and there's a great circle phi here. So this z plane can everyone see here? No, not quite. Okay, I'll continue there. So you get this picture. This is fine. So z plane maps to this phi circle times the line. So we get really we have a cylinder now, and then there is a corresponding expression on the cylinder. So coordinate on the cylinder that I use is like this. And then there is a expression on the cylinder, which is of similar form. You have operator inserted only at these points, and this in certain coordinate system, this circle is singled out. And that contracted with U's, which in this coordinate look like e to the I W bar over 2L to the minus I W bar over 2L. And now we close this line into a circle just as before. And work in the twisted sector that was introduced here. Close Ry into a circle and work in twisted sector. And now we find that this thing has the following properties. First of all, it's periodic in S1y. It turns out that the non-periodicity of this thing in the twisted sector and the non-periodicity, explicit non-periodicity of these factors, they cancel each other. Then its periodicity in the phi direction is controlled by minus 1 to the power 2 h. Here h is the conformal dimension of the vertex operator. And of course, these things are in the cohomology of those supercharges still, and holomorphic. So what we obtain in this way is the VOA on the torus. So what we get is a VOA on the torus, which is this phi circle times the y circle, with, in general, Navier-Schwarz-Ramond spin structure. And, well, the fact is that this is precisely the Beam et al. Vertex algebra, but placed on the torus with this spin structure. And now I should make a remark about this object that I mentioned here, because it was mentioned for a reason. Namely, if we turn on holonomy, so if we turn on this holonomy along the y circle, this flips the Ramond spin structure to an S. And another thing that we could do is actually add monodromy defect. So it would be supported inside the sphere and along, so the, it would be supported along the torus, that is the y circle times another circle that links the phi circle, with such a monodromy around that defect. And that defect would also flip the other spin structure along the other circle. This flips the NS structure into R along the phi circle. So in the end, we get all four possible spin structures on the torus by including this thing. OK. So this was a review how this construction works on S3 times S1. The punchline is that you just get the same vertex algebra as in flat space, but placed on the torus with whatever spin structure you want to. And if we don't add any additional refinements like this holonomy or this monodromy defect, we just get an SR spin structure. Now let me move to part two, which is the dimensional reduction. Before that, are there any questions?
I have a question, actually. This procedure of the S3 dart and S1 original function should give you a very particular conformal block for the VOA?
Yeah, it gives you the vacuum character of the VOA. So
these VOAs had a number of, it's not obviously modular and variant.
Yeah, so the module invariance, there is no known interpretation of module invariance from the 4D point of view.
There's no modeling by Simon.
Right. Well, you still have like large diffeomorphisms of S3 times S1. You can think of S3 times S1 as the elliptic vibration over the two sphere, and you could ask, what about the SL2Z in the fiber? But it hasn't been explored. But if you just focus on the torus partition function, there are no.
I mean, you call it torus partition function, but it's not. It's a conformal block, right?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, should I say any more, anything?
No, it's okay.
Okay. I will actually use modular transformation in an essential way later, but that would be the conjectural part, so to speak, because, of course, the modular properties are only fully proven in the case of rational CFT, and then in this more general, they're not rational, but results such as modular differential equations suggest that there might be modular properties still.
There's no partition function. They live the boundary of the 3D theory. There's a 3D theory with lots of states acted on by the modular group.
Well, the characters certainly make sense, right? You can have compute characters of various modules with insertions of observables. And the claim is those correspond to like correlators in the 4D theory. Now, first of all, let me mention that there's an obvious problem. If you try to do this in flat space, if you try to do KK reduction in flat space wouldn't work because it breaks conformal symmetry. As you compactify in a circle, and then you flow, and you restore it in the IR. So you have conformal symmetry in the UV, in the IR, and no obvious connection. So you have to do something else. So one way to solve this problem is, of course, is to put theory in the omega background, as has been studied by people here. And that would work for Lagrangian theories. But here, I want to focus on general subconformal theories, which are not necessarily Lagrangian. And in that case, this seems to be the approach that at least I know how to work with, because there's no obvious way to describe omega background in that case. So here, as you see, the tidal algebra construction works for a circle of arbitrary radius. So let's say that this S1 has a circumference beta L. And you can just take beta to 0 and study that limit and see what happens to the vertex algebra. So on this background, we're going to study beta to 0 limit. I want to mention a few properties. First, in Lagrangian case, this gives you the standard S3 background. So in Lagrangian case, beta to 0 gives the standard S3 background. And in particular, the way it works is that we have, as I explained before, we do a while to get S3 times S1 times R, then close it to S3 times S1, and then take the limit to get S3. On the other hand, we could first go in this direction, reduce. So here we do aka reduction, get a theory on S3, and then do a Weyl transformation here. And well, at least in Lagrangian case, you can explicitly check that this diagram commutes, and we're going to assume that it also works in non-Lagrangian case, which kind of makes sense from locality, because shrinking the circle is a UV notion, and you can think of looking at the S3 locally, where it's almost flat.
So here on the right-hand side, you have this twist by R symmetry, right?
That's right.
Yeah, what about this direction?
So,
do that.
Well, it actually generates you masses, like those conformal masses for the fields that you haven't, I think that's the resolution. Because it's like you have holonomy for the R symmetry in the limit. When you shrink the circle, it gives you masses to certain fields. And in the action that you get here, there's a conformal coupling to curvature.
Right. Yeah, well, I was kind of confused, because if you include that R symmetry twice, that seems to break.
Oh, here you don't include it here.
You don't do that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, here the math. Yeah.
Okay. What you are saying is that this curvature coupling corresponds to R symmetry twist.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I see.
Another thing is that this beta to zero limit is actually beta to zero is divergent. Because there's a known Hardy behavior, namely partition function on S3 times S1. well, if I take logarithm of partition function, it behaves like, well, in my convention, like this. Here, C4D minus A minus A4D. These are the four-dimensional Weyl anomalies. And this is true when C4D is greater than A4D. And we can treat, actually, the four-dimensional theory as a UV completion of this three-dimensional theory. And in this sense, this divergence can be subtracted by a three-dimensional counterterm. So, and this, actually, the right counterterm that is supersymmetric and removes this divergence is the simply the supersymmetric completion of the Einstein-Hilbert action. So this can be removed. By the, let's call it Einstein-Hilbert counterterm. And one can check that there are no finite counterterms. So this, what remains is actually a well-defined finite quantity, which is interpreted as the S3 partition function. However, I can continue here. This is not going to work if C4D is less or equal. So this is problematic. If C4D is not greater than A4D, because as is known, in that case, there are some subleading divergences. So I will only consider that in the case when C4D is greater than A4D. I'll make some comments about the other cases maybe at the very end. Now, another quite important property of this limit is that line operators of the four-dimensional theory, they can wrap the circle in the S3 times S1 geometry. And in the 3D limit, they become new local operators in three dimensions. For example, this is how a vector multiplet acquires additional scalar in three dimensions. Because in four dimensions, it has two real scalars. In three dimensions, it has three real scalars. And one can think of the extra scalar as coming from the Wilson line wrapping the circle. Also, in three dimensions, there are well-known monopole operators, which are relevant for the Coulomb branch side. But they also come from Tuft and Dion's wrapping the circle. What's interesting, they can actually modify the cohomology, namely some of the operators that were in the cohomology in four dimensions, they can be lifted by these line operators. So line operators, lines on S1 beta can lift some Schur operators in the beta to zero limit. The way it works is that if you have, let's say, O is a local 4D operator, and it's in the cohomology of our supercharges. And let's say that we have two lines, L1 and L2 lines, wrapped on the circle, such that L2, say, is a Q of L1.
perturbation of a line does not use an insertion of a point on a line, not a line.
Well, in this case, since we're in compact geometry, we can act with supersymmetry on the line by just simply looking at the tubular neighborhood and then integrating the supersymmetry current around the line. It makes, that would be problematic in non-compact geometry a little bit, but here it makes sense. And in the limit, as beta goes to zero, this gives you a relation between the corresponding local operators. And it might happen that this local operator that originates from L2 just coincides with O. And in that case, O is removed from the cohomology. One example.
Maybe with L you mean something more general than just a line, a line with next operator insertions.
Oh, I mean a line like, for example, Wilson line.
Q on a Wilson line does not give a Wilson line. You give a Wilson line with an operator insertion.
Sure, yeah, it gives you a Wilson line and some fermion and integrated along the line.
It's not still not a line defect, it's a scientific local operator. It's okay, that's just a matter of.
Yeah, that's the matter of what you call a line, I guess. Well, it's a line with a local operator integrated along the line.
Okay.
But then as you.
It's a fermionic parameter.
Yes.
So it's a fermionic deformation of a line.
Yes.
It's the same thing, right?
And then as you shrink the circle, it just becomes relation between two local operators. And but at Borel, I should mention that in four dimensions, you have Gay-Gini, which are in the cohomology, for example, for free vector multiplet, and that's how you get BC system. But then in three dimensions, they're not in the cohomology, and that's precisely because they become Q exact due to this additional operator that comes from the Wilson line. Now, so what happens is that in three dimensions, all the operators in the cohomology are scalars. In four dimensions, they might have spin. And because of this mechanism, what happens is that as vector spaces, the Schur operators in 3D, they just form a subspace in the Schur operators that we have in 4D. So there are a few non-trivial statements that go into this. First of all, and this is the subspace, actually, not just, it's a very particular subspace. It's a subspace of scalar operators, which are in this context also known as Higgs operators. So, yeah?
In the 4D space, do you also include line operators?
No. So this is a statement about how the spaces of local operators in the cohomology, in those cohomological constructions in 4D and 3D are related. The statement is that here, all the operators with spin, they get removed from the cohomology in the limit. All operators without spin remain, and you do not get anything else besides those scalars that you had in 4D. This can be proven with using representation theory of the superalgebra in a quite simple way. So this is a statement about vector spaces, but how about the algebraic structures? So how about the algebraic structures? Well, they are captured by correlation functions and how they behave in the beta to zero limit. So. Captured by correlators. And now let me move to the third part. This is the Joule algebra. Let me tell you what this Joule algebra is in first intuitively. So intuitive. Consider a, so let's first for simplicity have a Z graded bosonic vertex operator algebra. So so we have VOA V on the cylinder, let's say. On this cylinder. Of circumference beta. And let's ask what happens when beta goes to zero. Well, we know that what usually happens is that the zero modes survive, and then everything else we kind of throw it away. Well, in this case, we also have some insertions, some operators, and if we take this cylinder to be infinitely thin, by conformal transformation, we can also consider it to be infinitely long, and then there would be this long tubes between operator insertions and in Euclidean signature, this Euclidean evolution kind of projects you on the lowest energy state. So, the remote survive and are equipped with a natural algebraic structure. Oh, it's a multiplication such that what they give you is exactly what's called Joule's algebra of the vertex algebra V. Now, more precisely, so if you have some element V and the corresponding vertex operator, you can shift this summation index. Let's shift it in the following way. The conformal dimension of A minus 1 plus n. And here we get n plus the conformal dimension of A. So this just to make it manifest that the zero mode, which is usually denoted little o of A, is this component A degree of A minus 1. And then in turns out that, well, when acting on some modules, the product of this zero modes is equal to a zero mode of the following object, where a star is a new product. So it's some new operation. And one can actually define this product. Well, one should define two products. So let's say that U and V are vectors in the vertex algebra. Then one defines two products. One is defined as a residue in Z. Degree of U. And here we take the product of the way this vertex operator acts on V. And well, in the old literature, it would be just like written just like this. The Solian cats would also write h bar here just to introduce a parameter that measures, captures dimension. I find it more illuminating this way. And then there is another product which is very similar, namely 1 plus h bar z degree of u z. And the following thing, if you take you so you just take the space generated by all possible products of the first kind, it gives you a two-sided ideal for the second product. And then the Zhu algebra is defined as the quotient of V by this O of V. It turns out that this is associative algebra with respect to this star product. More generally, actually, there exists also, so this is, oh yeah, and I should say that a very important property of this Zhu algebra that was originally found by Zhu, that the V modules are in one-to-one, so the modules of the vertex algebra are in one-to-one correspondence with the modules of this associative algebra. I should. There are some words that I should say that are probably admissible, and some other word which I'm forgetting. But the point is that if you have a module of the vertex algebra, you can restrict it to the zero modes, and you get module of this Zhu algebra for free. But in the other direction is it's a much more non-trivial statement that actually each module of Zhu can be. So this is the module for the zero mode algebra can be extended. Uniquely up to isomorphism to a module of a vertex algebra.
So there must be some strong hypothesis on the vertex algebra. There's some simple examples where it's false with an illustrious energy tensor.
So. Oh, well, okay. Here we're working with vertex algebras that have stress energy tensor.
There should be some other hypothesis.
Originally, in Zhu's papers, those were. So he considered bosonic Z-graded vertex algebras that have a stress energy tensor. And then it was later generalized to have Z-graded, where have also bosons and fermions. Okay, yeah. Yeah, I could just pull out the paper and see what the list of properties that. I mean, I should say highest weight modules. So that it makes sense to consider to the lowest weight subspace, which then gives you the representation of the Jouve's algebra. Okay, I guess I should skip the generalization to half integrally graded case, because just stick to in which case we would actually need to consider twisted modules. But for now, for the rest of the talk, I'll just stick to bosonic Z graded. Here goes part four. The limit, the tau to zero, where tau is the complex structure of the torus, tau to zero, or also can be called high temperature. Limit of torus correlators. Because this is going to be the part where I connect this discussion to what I said before about the beta to zero limit. So if we have a bunch of insertions on the torus, we can define a correlation function and this is, by the way, doesn't require, so to the common question that was raised before, it doesn't require for us to have a partition function, because we only look at the chiral parts, we only look at the characters. In the denominator, I will put a character of a certain module. And in the denominator, it's just the character with insertions on the torus. Oh, well, okay, yeah. Now, in our case, the module that we need is actually the vacuum module. But you can have more general modules. Oh, how can we study the high temperature limit of such correlators? That is the tau to zero limit. Well, recall that Q here is e to the 2 pi I tau. Well, in cases when we can compute these correlators, we can just compute them and take the limit. But in general, it's good to use modularity. Now, of course, modular properties, the modular behavior of correlation functions has only been proven mathematically for rational VOAs.
It's just false.
Well,
there's no the correlation functions require the choice of an element called loss, which is acted on by S to Z. If you choose an element which is not invariant, then they're obviously not invariant.
Yeah.
So,
well, well, in the rational, in the case of rational VOAs,
there's no conformal box. Right? They can't find it, that's all.
Well, what do you mean there's no conformal block? You have correlation function, you can consider the space generated by parity. Well, so in the rational case, there's certainly modular behavior of, if you have correlator of operators, you can do modular transformation and expand it in terms of correlators in as a sum of correlators of a different modules. And the first proof was actually in the Zhu's paper. Now, there's no reason to expect it for general vertex algebras, but conjecturally, it also holds for vertex algebras that appear in this context of 40n equals 2 theories. At least the characters, they satisfy modular differential equations. So I'm going to proceed under the assumption, which, for example, the Beam Rastelli in that paper on Higgs branches, they also make this assumption that the standard modular behavior holds for these vertex algebras as well. The results that follow from that assumption, they can be, in cases that they can be checked by explicit computation, they coincide. So it seems to work. Namely, if you have a trace in I's module of these things. And then let me introduce tau tilde, which is minus 1 over tau, w tilde, which is w over tau for each I, and q tilde, which is e to the 2 pi I tau tilde. Here we have modular F metric. And then we have traces over various modules. Now, as we take the tau to zero limit, here it's q tilde. Tau goes to zero. In this limit, q tilde goes to zero. So in this expression, there's only some leading term that survives in this limit. And that term is the contribution of the module of the lowest conformal dimension. So what you get in as tau goes to zero, you get this prefactor then let me assume that there is only one module of of lowest conformal dimension. In that case, q tilde will have this lowest conformal to the power of the lowest conformal dimension minus c over 24. And we should also restrict to the lowest weight space of that module. So what you got is a trace of mj 0. Well, since due to the lack of time, I'm skipping a few steps. But here you also need to include projectors in this subspace of lowest conformal dimension. If the vertex algebra were unitary, then this module would be just the vacuum module. And so in that limit, this correlator would just reduce to a trace or just to the vacuum endpoint function with such projectors on the vacuum inserted. Thank you. So I'm sorry. Here M, J mean 0 is the lowest L naught eigenspace of M J min. Now let me notice that for primary O's, this thing is just the product of zero modes. Which, as I mentioned previously, is just zero mode of the product in Zhu's algebra. If O is non-primary, then you would also have additional terms with zero modes of other operators of lower dimensions multiplied by, well, yeah. But the point is that in that limit, the algebraic structure is basically determined by the Zhu's algebra. And the statement that I want to make is that this high temperature limit of torus correlators gives you certain trace on that Zhu's algebra. So if you have an element of a vertex algebra that represents a class in Zhu's algebra, and let's assume that this is a homogeneous element, then this trace in this sort of description is given by, so there was, recall that there was that parameter h bar that I introduced earlier, h bar to the degree of a. And basically we get trace over this lowest eigenspace of the minimal module of the zero mode of A divided by the trace of identity. Now you could object that, okay, in those more general vertex algebras, this might be an infinite dimensional space, so it's not clear what I really mean by this. And I would say that in those cases, you really have to compute the high temperature limit of correlators and treat this as a regularization because you have both traces here and here, and the things with the infinite dimensionality would cancel out. But at least for cases that were checked, this works out perfectly. And then this thing, okay, it can be general. Extended by linearity, and it gives you a trace from Zhu's algebra, from Zhu V to C with parameter h bar. Now,
is it a twisted trace?
In general, it's a twisted trace because that happens when you actually consider half integrally graded, then. For half integrally graded VOA, there's a special automorphism which multiplies those that have half integral by minus one, and that's the twist that appears. However, this trace is degenerate. And the reason is precisely that there are those operators that are lifted from the cohomology in the 3D limit, as I explained. So let me remind that when we have a trace, we can define, so if T is a trace, and there's some product of two elements, we can define a bilinear form simply as this. So this is the definition of BT. And the claim is that it has a non-trivial kernel. Let's call it M. Well, in this case, both left and right kernels coincide, so it doesn't matter which one you take. And the reason is that those, if you consider correlators of those operators that are, that include operators that are lifted in the 3D limit, such correlators, physically, they should vanish in the high temperature limit because they decouple from the cohomology. And there's always an operator of that kind, because the vertex algebras that we consider, they come from 4D n equals 2, they always have a stress energy tensor. And stress energy tensor is an example of Schur operator that has spin. It actually comes from an operator with J1 equals J2 equals 1/2, because it's just an R symmetric current in four dimensions, so that H, which is R plus J1 plus J2, this thing is 1. It turns out to be 2. So it has to be lifted from the cohomology. So in particular, this kernel, it always has an element which is given by the stress energy tensor, let me call it little t, minus some number times h bar squared. And this kernel, it's obviously an ideal, a two-sided ideal in the Joule algebra. So the claim that the right algebra that you get in three dimensions is actually a quotient of a Joule algebra by this kernel. And then this algebra equipped with a trace, well, in general, it will be a twisted trace with a certain, which is just the trace on the Joule algebra. It induces an obvious way a trace on AH. And so the claim is that this data is what determines this 1D protected sector in the 3D theory, because, well, you have algebraic structure and you have a way to compute correlators by applying the trace. Sorry, when I saw the schedule, I thought that I had 1.5 hours, and I prepared a 1.5 hour long talk. But should I stop earlier than?
Let's see, we can have a little break so that if people want to leave, they can leave, and then people are interested, and then they can come back and discuss more.
Or I can also squeeze in like have like 5 or 10 more minutes, and that's it. Okay.
If people wanted to leave, they'll have left. They now know that they can leave.
Okay.
Yeah, they're free to.
I just want to consider one example. So the example will be a fine VOA. So in this case, if you take the product of two currents, so okay, let me call J, little j will be the Joule's algebra image of a current.
So the Joule algebra is the enveloping algebra.
Yeah. Yes, that's true. So the leading contribution here is in terms of this current, it corresponds to the normal ordered product, the CFT normal ordered product, and then there is only one H bar correction, which is just this. Now, the stress energy tensor, let's just call it T, is of course given by the Sugawara construction. I assume that this is a non-degenerate level. So we have sum of normal order products J. J. And an explicit computation, either using this or, okay, in this case, one can actually compute correlators on the torus just in terms of theta functions. It's a simple exercise. And the high temperature limit shows that the trace of T is h squared times a number, which is just delta min in that language. And in particular, this difference lies in the ideal that we have to quotient by. In the rank one case, it actually generates that ideal. It's just the quadratic Casimir. In the higher rank case, you also have other higher relations, and you get the Joseph ideal, so that the quotient is actually describes the quantization of the minimal nilpotent orbit, as it should. One actually has to do one more step, because it's natural to describe things in terms of operators that are orthogonal with respect to this B. It turns out that these two are not orthogonal. One can orthogonalize. And find the following. That now we have this new type of normal ordered product, which is orthogonal to all lower dimension operators. Then and the term which is now this. Well, psi squared is the length squared of the longest root. And mu is some expression which is 4k plus the dual Coxeter number. Sorry, I forgot to write it in my notes, but this delta min has also expression in terms of known expression for the algebra. And then one can, once you have this expression, you can also compare it with, like, apply it to a number of known theories. For example, the 4dn equals 2 theories that belong to the Delin-Cvetanovich series, they all have affine Kac-Moody as the chiral algebras, and in that case, the expression like this is also known in three dimensions, because there was this paper by Qiming Chang, Martin Fluter, Yingxuan Lin, Shuhang Chao, and Yifan Wang, where they use bootstrap techniques to compute these algebras in three dimensions, and one can compare and have non-trivial checks, for example, and everything works out nicely. Another nice series of examples are Argyris-Douglas theories. And then I'll stop. Of this type. In this case, somehow the three-dimensional reduction apparently was not known in the literature. So in the paper with Yifan Wang, we propose that the 3D dimensional reduction is actually T of SU2, which is quantum electrodynamics with SQED with two flavors in three dimensions plus, or I should write tensor product, n minus one free twisted hypers. So it's a decoupled sector. And again, one can check this using various techniques, like look at the Coulomb branch spectrum, everything worked out, and partition functions, and also look at how this story works. And it turns out that the algebra that you get by dimensional reduction from four dimensions is not precisely the algebra you have here, but it's deformation by affine parameters. And this is something that was, that's related to some observation due to Buikan and Nishinaka from 2016, that when you study this high temperature limit of Schur index for theories like this, for example, the four-dimensional R-symmetry group gets related to the three-dimensional R-symmetry group in the following way. So this, they just coincide, and this should get enhanced. However, this is SU2C. In theories like this, and actually in generic superconformal theories, the little r, they have a fractional spectrum. Whereas here, they could be, the charges have to be half integer because it's SU2. So it means that along the RG flow, they mix with some flavor symmetries, namely with Coulomb branch symmetries. And this mixing in the 3D language, it's equivalent to turning on imaginary masses for those symmetries that you mix with. For Coulomb branch symmetries, imaginary the masses is the same as FI parameters. So in this case, the reduction actually gives you the algebra deformed by FI parameters, which is, in some sense, is the artifact of using the sphere partition function. Maybe if there were a way to do it, for example, with the omega background, then for those Argyris Douglas theories, then this wouldn't happen. But yeah. And then the list of open questions involves basically what to do with the theories that have C4D less. So I guess I'll write it here. I want to mention just open questions. One is the case when C4D is less or equal than A4D. In particular, it also involves the maximal super Young Mills, so the n equals 4 super Young Mills in four dimensions, where C and A coincide. In that case, the Cardi behavior is not as nice, and it's not, so one should do something. This story doesn't work out as straightforwardly as I told you. Another thing is to add defects, which means that the vacuum module would be replaced by some non-trivial modules. Another possibly interesting direction is use free field realizations of the vertex algebras. They could perhaps apply to this story in an interesting way. And of course, I mean, any list of open questions should always include holography, right? So there is some EDS dual of the chiral algebra. There is some EDS dual of the associative algebra in 3D. So this story suggests that there might be something interesting. EDS dual. Some interesting counterpart of this Zhu algebra story. And I'll stop here.